You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Sam Rosen, he joins us right now. Sam, it's great to talk to you. I'm sure you've done so much in your career, but I don't think you've, unless it was the Olympics, I don't think you've ever called hockey in August.
No, never hockey in August. I have done a couple of games off monitors, but never hockey in August. And a friend of mine texted me last night, said, hockey in July, that was really fun. And I said, if you like that, wait for hockey in August.
Right. So. It really is something. And we got to see it last night in the scrimmage. And before we get to all that stuff, there was news from the other tenant at MSG, and that is the Knicks. And they have made it official, hiring Tom Thibodeau. And you know, you've been around a long time, so you have perspective on everything. And I was just curious, as you know, Tom was with Jeff Van Gundy when the Knicks were winning in the 90s. He was on the coaching staff there. He has had success now as a head coach going from there. As the Rangers have been able to get it right with what they've done in a quick rebuild, what do you think of the hire of Tom Thibodeau with the Knicks?
Well, I love it. You touched on it right there, Alan. The fact that he has such great experience and he has a winning style and a winning culture, and he knows New York. So he knows what New York is all about. He knows the pressures involved. He's been there. He's coached at the Garden. And I think it's a great hire. And hopefully it'll work out where the Knicks will head in a winning direction and stay there. That's the goal of the Rangers and the Knicks, not only to win 1 year or make the playoffs 1 year or make a strong run for 1 year. Both teams want to be there for 10 years in a row and make it a long run. And I think with a guy like Tom Thibodeau, you've got a winning culture to build from.
How much do you think the success of the quick turnaround of the Rangers kind of influenced the direction in which they think they want to go with the Knicks, and seeing how they rebuilt it, how honest they were with the open letter to everybody, how transparent they were about, listen, this thing isn't going to happen overnight. We've seen on the Knicks side that it seems to sometimes be a sense of urgency to kind of try and do a quick rebuild, and then they end up building a beautiful house without a basement and a great foundation. You know, maybe is Dolan starting to pay attention to how he was able to have success, sustainable success with the Rangers, and saying, hey, this is a great way to run the other business as well?
I think some of that has to rub off, Bart, because you've seen the stability of the Rangers for years. They had the long run where they made the playoffs 11 out of 12 years. They got to the Stanley Cup final. They came within one win of making to the Stanley Cup final another year. So, I think it may rub off, but they're two separate entities. You know, it's two different sports, different styles, whether it's the players involved and the way you have to coach them and direct them. And it's different sports, but no doubt winning is the key. And I think when you build the type of organization that the Rangers have had and now that the Knicks are building, I think that's a real positive step.
I mean, we talked about the identity and what we believe the identity of the Knicks are going to be. What's the identity of this young Rangers team and with this outstanding goalie play that they have and the options they have at the goalie position? How does that position them maybe to make a lot of noise on this restart, meaning that they can have three guys that potentially can stand on their head if need to be?
The commitment, Bart, was to youth and speed. And when the youth showed the quality, they have added players now to make them a step farther to where they want to get to and a step closer to where they want to get to. And by that, I mean they already had some talented players. Chris Kreider, Mika Zibanejad acquired in a great trade with Ottawa. Now they add, because of the fact that the young players are coming along, they believe in them. A Filipino, Kako is a high draft pick. They believe he'll come along and be a top flight player. The player, the young defenseman that they brought in, and Adam Fox and Ryan Lindgren. So the youth is quality, and they added to that a player like Artemi Panarin, who is now a candidate for the MVP and the top player in the league. Two top categories. One, the Hart Trophy, the MVP, the Ted Lindsay Award voted by the players. He's in the final three in both those categories. So now they have not only elite players, quality players, but that young group coming up, and that makes for a very, very positive situation for the Rangers. And getting back to the goaltending, they've got a great situation. Going into the postseason play, they have three quality goaltenders. They love Igor Shesterkin. He came on. He's been a winner at every level that he's played at, in the KHL in Russia, in the American League when he came over here to North America this year, played brilliantly, came to the Rangers in January, and goes 10-2. They believe he is the future. It's tough on one of the greats, maybe the greatest goaltender the Rangers have ever had, in Henrik Lundqvist. He's still got a lot left in the tank, but he's got to give some space to the youngster. And then there's Alexander Georgiev, who's an outstanding player in his own right.
It's great to have options for David Quinn. It's, yeah, you know, that's going to help, especially with the kind of restart that this is. So we had the game last night, Islanders, Rangers, and you, Joe Micheletti, in studio, as you mentioned, watching it and calling it in studio, not live. As we know, the NHL's in two separate city bubble cities, and the Islanders and Rangers both will be playing their series in Toronto. And after such a long layoff, and, you know, my son plays hockey, so I kind of have that perspective of when you haven't been on the ice for a while, man, it's hard to get back into it and really get going. You can practice basketball. You can practice other things on fields and on courts, but you need ice. You need skates. You need that kind of stuff. And so when you watched the game last night, and I know Quinny said what he said about what he thought his team's competitive level was, but when you watched it last night, did it look like, it's been a while, or were you amazed about how quickly the rhythm picked up, and by the end of the game, it looked like both teams were ready?
I thought there were some spots that were a little off, you know, some of the passing a little off, but overall, the pace of play, the conditioning is evident. The players stayed in great shape. Some of the players who were in Europe did get ice time, were able to skate. When the players started to come back to New York, they were allowed to go on the ice in informal sessions with no more than six in a group. And then they've had a couple of weeks of on-ice training in a training camp situation where they've gone at high speed. And the practices have been a little longer than normal. Usually they're around 45 50 minutes. They were going a little over an hour. They were scrimmaging. Maybe the physicality wasn't there in the training camp situation. It was a little more physical tomorrow night, and believe me, on Saturday, you'll see the physical play. I think mm-hmm. that's the one thing that the players have to get used to and had to get used to last night. More stiffer battles along the boards. The battles in front of the net to get the loose pucks. That might have been a big factor missing. But overall, conditioning, pace of play was excellent. And I think maybe some of the timing might have been still a little off.
Sam, what's one of the things that you might have noticed? You said you've called games on a monitor before. I know a lot of broadcasts have said that they've had to do that, in international play and other type of situations. But what is it? If your background, your experience, and you've been, the game 794, probably the loudest you've ever heard that building or felt, you know, emotionally. So it being in the building is special. But for you, you know, what is the difference? And is it a challenge to you even at this point in your career to call these games?
Well, I think it's a bit of a challenge, Alan, and there's no doubt about that. I think it's totally different. To me, what's missing is being there and seeing what's going on over the entire ice, looking at the benches, what's going on amongst the players on the benches, what are the coaches doing? Is the coach yelling at a player? Is the coach yelling at the referee? What's going on behind the play? Is there something going on between a couple of players? You miss that. With the TV and doing it off the monitor, we had great clarity. The huge monitor in the studio, you know the studios, Alan, you've been there and worked there. It was clear as could be, but you have to focus on the puck. You have to stay there, and you have to be dependent on the camera person who's in the building and being the lead camera and following the play. So that's what you're dependent on. That's really the biggest difference. When you're in the arena and sitting in the booth at whatever level, you can see everything. And if you want to take your eye off and take a quick look at the bench, is a player hurting on the bench? Is he going down the runway for something? You can always get that quick peek as to what's going on throughout the arena and on the entire ice. Last night and then in the games we do from the studio, you got to focus on the puck.
Now, I think the product looks tremendous visually. I think they did a tremendous job with it. But can you see yourself maybe asking them to give you some different camera angles that maybe you can only see in the studio?
So Sam Cam. Be able to, we need Sam Cam.
Yeah, get a nice little Sam Cam there. And if the Rangers continue to advance, do you see yourself maybe getting your own little igloo, your own little phone booth where you can go in so you can get the visual?
A bubble in the bubble.
The bubble in the bubble.
Get a personal bubble, huh, Bart? I don't know if they'll go that route, but we do have the game camera. We have what's called an all 12 camera in football, Bart. It's the all 22, as you know. So the all 12 gives you that's a cutaway, gives you a high angle view, and then we as a network get one camera where we can ask for a shot of the bench or ask for a shot of a player that we can focus on. So basically, we're looking at three cameras. I don't believe we'll get any more. I think the league has basically restricted it. And, of course, you'll see probably a lot more with the network telecast when NBC does their games and gets their exclusive coverage.
Sam, I know you obviously do football as well. NFL and Major League Baseball are not going to be operating in bubbles, and we're seeing baseball already. They have one team now, the Marlins, had an outbreak. Now they're a little concerned about the Phillies as well, and they're shutting them down. And they're, again, pushing through. The NFL planning to do the same thing, where they're going to travel, not use a bubble. But we're seeing in the NBA and the NHL as well, we're not seeing any positive tests. We're seeing the bubble seems to be working. So, from your experience, again, you've done a lot of different sports. Do you feel like the bubble is definitely the way to go? And that's where you can see, what's happening with baseball might be a concern for football or the NFL going forward into the fall.
I think that's a great concern, Alan, for the NFL is the guys are going to be on buses. They're going to be on planes. It's going to be, and it's a big group. It's a bigger group in football. Once the season starts, you'll have 53 on the roster or maybe 55 this year. You got a lot of players, you got a lot of trainers and a lot of coaches. That's a lot of people. So there's great concern there as to how they'll handle it. As far as hockey is concerned, I think the NHL has almost set the standard. The NBA, good for them. They've gotten off to a nice start. And as far as the players are concerned, players have to be disciplined. The NHL has done a great job. The individual teams, I know in talking to Rangers president John Davidson, they have really been over the players and with the players and emphasizing for the players how important it is to follow the protocols and not be a cause of anything to set back the league. The league's gotten off to a great start. Negative tests throughout the phase three, and so far, from what I'm hearing up in Toronto, the situation is very, very good for the players.
Right, now, do you see this as an opportunity, maybe, just maybe, for hockey to make that jump up a level as far as popularity, as far as sports, because it is a great visual product. It's hockey. It's fast-paced. You know, you look at baseball, it's kind of slow. We don't know if play is going to stop. Does hockey and hockey players see this as an opportunity to make their way into the casual living room of casual fans and maybe become a little bit more mainstream?
I hope so, Bart. I mean, I look at it as mainstream. I've grown up with it all my life and and followed the sport and now called the games for 36 years. I look at hockey as one of the four main sports, and I think it'll get more focus, more attention, and with a positive way. You've got a situation, credit the league and the players and the Players Association for getting together, working together to make this work. And then they have extended the CBA for 4 years. They have 6 years of labor peace. That's going to be big for the National Hockey League. And I think if the league gets through this, and gets through the playoffs, and it comes off without any glitches, without any major setbacks, I think it'll be a big step forward for hockey. I really do.
Sam, isn't it amazing when you go through a career like you've had and you feel like by now I think I've seen it all, and now you'll be seeing someone raise the Stanley Cup in October?
Oh, you know what? It's so strange. Just the way we started our conversation of hockey in July and August. It is so bizarre, and just sitting around from the middle of March and waiting and hoping and would it happen, and players testing positive and all situations, and how are they going to run a training camp, and how are they going to pull off the playoffs and get a structured playoff system. They've been able to come through it, and it's taken time, but again, I credit the league for progressive thinking, and I credit the players for their great cooperation, understanding, and dedication to the game.
We love seeing hockey back, but we also love hearing you calling it as well. We look forward to it. Enjoy it. Have a good time, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Saturday, 11:30 pregame, noon, Rangers in Carolina, game one.
Let's get to some stuff that we haven't been able to touch on yet in Audio Files.
The Audio File.
First and foremost, so as we talked about, Joe Kelly got the 8 games from Major League Baseball for throwing behind. Are you okay? Alex Bregman after a 3-0 pitch. Wow. This was on Tuesday. It got all, you know, everybody got all hot and bothered, yelling at each other. Correa was talking. Kelly. Everybody loved Kelly and the meme of him making the pouty face and all the smack talking going on. And we were like, yeah, good. The Astros are going to remember that. We all hate them. And then Major League Baseball said, yeah, but don't throw at people's heads. Buster, only on the suspension from GetUp.
This was an enormous suspension within the context of a 60-game season. It's the equivalent of a 21-game suspension in a 162-game season. Relievers in these type of instances typically get 2 to 5 games. And last night, the Dodgers were absolutely out of their minds, angry about this. They thought it was unfair because Kelly didn't actually hit either Alex Bregman or Carlos Correa. They were upset with the fact that Dave Roberts got a game and Dusty Baker didn't, despite the fact that Baker was yelling at Kelly during the course of that inning. But I think from Major League Baseball's perspective, if we look back at all the sign-stealing stuff dating back 2017, the biggest mistake that Rob Manfred made back during the Apple Watch situation, Yankees-Red Sox, he didn't come down with the hammer of discipline that altered behavior. This was designed to alter behavior. They're sending the message, look, we're not going to stand by as everybody takes shots at the Astros.
What do you think of it? 8 games.
It's excessive, and I think they expect him to appeal it, and he's going to get lesser than that. But the message is sent that, hey, we won't tolerate this. Remember, Dusty Baker and the Astros were crying, saying, hey, you know, these teams are targeting us before this thing even really started in spring training. You know what I mean? They were saying that. And, you know, what happens is now teams are going to have to get a little bit – can't be as obvious with it. Maybe hit him at like it's a wild pitch, hit him on the thigh, hit him on the butt, throwing at the head. You know, and I think the biggest thing that they want to deter are the benches clearing, because then you have a bunch of people that we're supposed to be doing social distancing, and they get in these arguments and start yelling at each other, then maybe something can happen that way. So I think it was more about the visual of them standing up and getting into each other's faces more than anything.
They're saying the people that are mad are saying that you're protecting the Astros who are cheating. Like, it's like you're defending the Astros. Bart, I feel like this. And as much the other day, I loved it. I felt like that was great. Good. We need to see more of this. It was good. We got to talk about that more than we talk about COVID. It was important for baseball because it was an emotional moment everybody wanted to talk about. However, don't be mad at baseball. You threw it at his head. You shouldn't throw it at his head. But be mad at the union, because the union is the one that really defended these players and got them the immunity that they wanted so they would speak during that investigation.
Yeah.
You know, there's no accountability there. So if you're a player, be mad. Be mad at the union. That's all. You want to be mad at somebody, be mad at the union. That's as simple as that. Be mad because those guys got protection because they asked for immunity, and then they were going to tell you what they knew. Okay, fine. So where's the retribution? Strike them out. You can still talk trash. Ain't nobody going to stop you from talking trash. Just let them know. And if occasionally you want to hit somebody in the hip, hit them in the hip.
Yeah, game's out of line. Either we got an insurmountable lead, or we can't catch them. Yeah, what's wrong?
But don't throw it heads, because then it becomes a thing where more and more people are doing it. Then, you just don't want to turn it into that. I think that was the part that baseball had to say. No, look, you want to throw it his butt or throw it his back? Yeah. Fine, don't throw it his head. All right, next up. This is a big story going on in your sport right now in the NFL. Marcus Spears on Golic and Wingo. What's happening now around the league, and we're seeing it more and more, Nate Solder of the Giants being one of them, are players opting out? So here's Spears' take on that.
I must say I've been a bit surprised, but not like to the point of being taken back, right? And obviously you see Damian Williams, running back from Kansas City, opt out. And this is what this is something that I thought could potentially happen, because if you look at most of these guys, it's not them making decisions about themselves. And, like, guys, we got to be honest. That's the scary part about this virus. It is your transmission of it to somebody that can't fight it. Obviously, Solder had cancer in his history, in his kids' history. And it's a lot of guys that's having to weigh this against the risk of not only immunity, but their immune systems and all of that being prepared to handle this while playing a professional sport with that history.
Now, you've got six players from the Patriots. I already told you about Nate Solder of the Giants, Marquise Goodwin of the Eagles. There's a number of players. Chance Warmack. You got a number of players that have decided to opt out because of the virus. They have that right to do that for this season. Does it surprise you?
It doesn't, because it's a lot of underlying health issues with a lot of players. A lot of players have, diabetes. I play with players that give themselves insulin shots, asthma, severe allergies. It's a lot of guys that have a lot of ailments, have underlying conditions. Some guys have, heart issues. I played with all kinds. Sickle cell, playing with Santonio Holmes, sickle cell anemia. You think about Ryan Clark that has the trait. So I think it's a lot of that. And then, of course, we all know that, football players have a lot of kids, so a lot of them don't want to endanger their children as well. You hear that as an excuse. No, not an excuse, as a reasoning for a lot of guys opting out, because, I forgot what player it was that said his wife had six miscarriages, and now that they finally had a kid and they don't want to put them at risk like that. So it's one of those things, man, where it's going to be tough, man. We're going to see, it's a second pool of players that are out of the NFL trying to get in. We'll see how seriously they want to be in, because there's going to be opportunities in that secondary free agent market to try and fill some of these voids. And I don't know, man. You have to ask yourself, is this league going to have an asterisk? You think about Everson Griffin. You think about Logan Ryan. Jadeveon Clowney. It's a lot of talented players out there that's going to fill the void. The good thing is that they're allowing the guys to leave, and they don't have to carry the team. Don't have to carry their salary for the salary cap. So it gives the team flexibility trying to fulfill the roster.
Last but not least, on audio files, so you remember the Lou Williams story. As he left the bubble, he got permission to leave the bubble, wanted to attend a funeral of someone close to him that had passed away. He did, and while there, someone happened to catch him at a club and took a picture and put it on social media. Took it down right away, but too late. You know how it is with social media. Once it's up there, it's up there. And so the league, of course, found out about it, so they put him into a longer quarantine. And he said that he went to this club because of the wings. And everybody, of course, laughed because who goes to a strip club for wings? Then you found out it was Magic City. And now everybody's learning that, no. You go there for the wings. And Bart Scott has told us all on this on these airwaves that, yeah, that's literally what you do. Like, there's really good wings at these places. You need to know this.
Trizzle, trizzle.
Yeah, so that's now become a thing. In fact, it's become such a thing around the NBA that Kevin Harlan, during a TNT broadcast, did discuss this topic.
I want to see how much pull we have in the city of Atlanta, see if we can get some of those chicken wings sent down here to Orlando.
Oh, no, you didn't.
We could celebrate, the restart with those wings.
Bart, I'm on a mission. Magic City needs to franchise now. This is the opportunity.
Yes.
Franchise now. Get to New York.
and also, you know, I mean, all he had to do was ask Reggie laughing. Reggie, you've been to Magic City. Don't front. Don't front,
like
man.
Like he doesn't know.
Yeah, don't act. He's like, ha, ha. Meanwhile, they got his jersey hanging from the rafters. They retired it. OG, triple OG, Reggie. The Boom Boom Special. They call it the Reggie Miller. Don't choke. Don't choke in the Boom Boom Room.
I really need to try these wings now.
Phrasing?
Have
field
not.
Trip. Field trip.
I got to admit, I mean, I've definitely had, experiences in Atlanta.
I told you.
I have not had the Magic City experience, and I can't believe it.
I told you Sin City has closed down in the Heights. They can bring Magic City 2.0 up here. And we can have a dancer exchange program where we send some of ours from up in the Heights down there, and then we take some of the Southern Peaches and the Southern Bells and bring them up here. And we kind of mismatch. It's called building bridges, man. Listen, nobody's ever really left from a strip club without a smile on their face. And they give all their money away, and you still leave with a smile on your face. You broke.
You walk out broke, and you still somehow. That was fun. Except, of course, Varsity Blues.
Hey, the crazy.
You open the door. Everybody has had that experience where you open the door and the sun is splatting. You're like, damn.
Hey, you know the crazy thing
I've been in here that long?
The crazy thing.
Has had that.
The crazy thing is when your wife looks at the credit card bill, when you get those cash advances and it don't say strip club, it says like some type of restaurant. You're like, what kind of restaurant would you at that you spent $5,000? Like, they had that, those truffles that Oprah be talking about? I had two of them, baby.
Prestige Restaurants Incorporated. It's always something like that. Tom Thibodeau, officially named head coach of the Knicks today, had a Zoom press conference. It was a little different, but Leon Rose, Scott Perry, and Tom on the call with reporters. And Bart, as we started out the show, we just went over some of the stuff that we felt was the most compelling, most interesting that he had to say. Now, for everybody listening, Tom Thibodeau will be a guest on the K-Show at 3:30. So keep it obviously right here, and you can hear their conversation, their interview with him. But just quickly, dream job for him. Remember, he spent 7 years under Jeff Van Gundy as an assistant coach. He just spoke glowingly about that experience. Yeah. Yeah, a guy from Connecticut who grew up loving the Knicks. He said for him, it's just special. I do think, and I know I said this, but I didn't get your take on it. Where they are right now as a franchise, they've been through a lot of guys. You heard me say this in the open, how it's everybody that had the job was like, I'm built for this. I can handle this. And then it's like, you people are crazy. And they all, when they all went out the door. I do think the Chris Canty blood in the ground phrase was important right now for the Knicks. You needed someone. And they had a bunch of guys they interviewed, not just Tom, but they did have Kenny Atkinson and Woodson, who also have that background here. But I do think you needed someone like this with a resume and also blood in the ground, experience, a job that's personal to him. I do think that's important.
Yeah, because you have to get it right. Because you had a lot of guys that said they have, you know, they had, you know, the grit to be part of this market, but they found out they didn't. You needed somebody that has already proven that they had the grit to coach in this market, because you have an opportunity to turn to change the narrative with all the salary cap space that you have, with all the draft equity you have. And if you bring somebody in here and they mess up all the work that you've done over the years, then you have to work forever to try and get it back. Remember how long it was before when the Knicks didn't have any draft picks. They already had traded their first round draft pick or their future draft pick. Now you have that where you can slide up. You have opportunities where you can make trades and move up and down the board, be able to get, you know, you can be Atlanta for a while. You can take bad contracts and just to get more picks, acquire more picks or more players and do things that way, right? So now they have flexibility. They have options, which is the greatest thing to have in life is options. You want to make sure you have somebody that can get it right and not really, you know, squander all the good equity and all the good, you know, resources and cap space that you have. And the fact that you said, hey, you know, get one that got blood in the ground, so to speak, like you said. Well, you got two because we anticipate that Woodson's going to be hired, you know, with him as well. So then maybe you can get two. So, I mean, two is better than one. I mean, Kidd was, you know, it was good because Kidd had played here. But you got somebody that's been a proven coach that's been in a game for a long time. Kidd's been a coach for a short period of time, a blink of an eye in comparison to Tom Thibodeau. So, which you understand, Tom has been in all types of different situations. He's dealt with all different types of teams. You're paying him for his experience. Who knows how long it lasts, right? Maybe he's here to set everybody straight. Maybe he's Larry Brown. He's going to fix the wrong, get everybody in line, and then maybe Woodson takes it to the finish line. But, you know he's here to set the great foundation, and he's going to get great coaches. I want to be sure and make sure that he gets a couple coaches that may be outside of what he would normally do. Let's talk about diversity. Get some young guy that's a young budding star in the coaching realm so that he can bring him here, teach him, but also have bright minds with different perspectives.
I think that's a very important part of it, and they have talked about how they want to have that diverse kind of staff. All right, 800-919-3776. Jonathan in Queens been holding a while. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, yeah, I waited a while, but it's always worth it to talk to you guys. So first of all, I wanted to say it's a great hire. I love the move, especially the fact that he's just hired as the coach, because obviously we saw what he gave up for Jimmy Butler when he was with Minnesota, and that just didn't work out well for them at all. But anyway, I just want to say to all the callers talking about the Knicks needing talent, it's very obvious, but you don't really put a roof up on a building before you build its foundation. And if you look over the last 7 years, like, we've been actually getting our draft picks, and up, unlike the decade prior to that where we're trading it all up. So, you know, a few of those ping pong balls go your way, you land someone like a Williamson, a Young, a Morant. And, you know, look at the pieces we have now. And if you add that right player, like a LaMelo Ball, I'm thinking, to that, you're looking at a whole different squad and a team with a lot of assets. And I was just curious, touching up on that, do you guys think Tibbs has the view of he wants to win here now? Or can he sit around and deal with not being successful at first as these guys develop? Thanks, guys, for taking the call.
You got it, Jonathan. It's a good question. And from what he sounded like, he's, I don't want to skip steps. I don't want to, like, you know, he was saying the right things about how it's a process that you have to build your team towards something. That's, you know, that's nice, but you still have to show success. And I think with Fizz, you know, he talked the same way. And the problem with Fizz is that he couldn't get them the win, which, you know, if you're at least competitive, people will, okay, all right, I see they're, you got to give them something tangible. And I think Tom, with the way he coaches, that foundation of defense, which defense travels well, right, Bart? You know that better than anybody. You did it up in Foxborough. If you have that foundation, you're competitive every night, regardless of whether you lack enough talent to outscore a team or to be able to come up big in the clutch. You got to get the talent to help you over the top. But if you have that foundation and people can see it, that's tangible progress. That's a team that's got something going. Then I think you have that patience in a rebuild. But I don't think they're going to be around here to win 20 games a year for a couple of years. I do not think that's part of this plan. Jay in the Bronx. Jay.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Good.
Quick question. With all this draft capital, it's a two-part question that the Knicks have. First, how do you guys feel about LaMelo Ball fitting? I feel like the organization might go with Halliburton, kind of a defensive player, kind of fits with them. And secondly, like, what do you think is too much capital to give up if we have to move up to get Melo? Thank you.
You got it. I don't know if you'd be able to trade up because it would cost you a ton. It all depends on where you land. LaMelo feels like he'd be good for New York, but Killian Hayes, the more I watch him, the more I think for a guy like Tibbs, could be fantastic. Halliburton's just got a funky shot, but he's a really smooth player. But Bart, I mean, it all depends on where you land in the lottery.
Yeah, I guess you've been deep in your prep, making you over.
The draft's not for another 3 months, and I'm, yeah, I'm like so deep into this thing.
You deep into your prep, man. I don't know, man. I just like the whole LaMelo Ball. It seems like some kids were built to be here, to play here.
That's awesome.
I mean, he's been under the cameras as the youngest brother of three, already has a professional brother in the league. He's played professional basketball already because he didn't go to college. I think he's ready. He's dealt with the pressure of being underneath his father. You know what I mean? I think he's ready to go, man. I talk about a six eight point guard could be like a Penny Hardaway, Hardaway, being able to facilitate, run with Mitchell Robinson. Robinson being able to have some type of Lob City 2.0 type of thing going. I mean, yo, that can be some exciting basketball, as well as making them defensively responsible as well. And if you have a show like that where he's running down, he's throwing these lobs, and R.J. Barrett's playing the wing, and he's pulling it up a little bit too, that will attract people because it's the style of play that's exciting, and it'll have the garden rocking.
You want to see you want to see now the development that comes from here. All right, you'll get Tom Thibodeau 3:30 on the K Show, so keep it right here. Also tonight on MSG, 7 o'clock for the press conference, and also Bill Pito with Tom as well. For us, we'll see you tomorrow, Bart.
I holla.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.